there's only so much land right there in the middle of the city of Pensacola to expand that industrial base around aviation. So I would say that's one of our core challenges is land for light industry.
What about workforce?
Oh, workforce is the largest challenge facing almost every industry in the United States. So skilled labor is at a premium, and recruiting and retaining that skilled labor for any industry sector is a common problem.
So this is going back a little bit in time, but it's going to become relevant because we got a Escambia County Commission meeting this week. I had been also haven't had a chance to cover this. This was the Thursday before I lost my voice and then went on vacation for a long time. The meeting about the Escambia County Commission meeting about first the committee of the whole, which, hey, thank God we have cows again. That means we can actually do government in the sunshine where decisions get made in front of the voters instead of however they were getting made for the last 2 years because we haven't had these meetings for 2 years. I mean, seriously, that's where they get together and talk about policy, where they don't actually take votes on what they're going to do, but we can all see the decision-making process happen. So kudos to Chairman Mike Kohler for finally bringing this back, something I've been asking about for, like I said, 2 years. Anyway, Nicole Gieslesson from the Haas Center at UWF talking about, I thought the relevant part of that clip was just the note that finding the appropriate workforce, it all sounds great, economic development. You know, hey, let's bring a company here and let's improve the quality of life for citizens in Escambia or Santa Rosa County. Well, there's a lot of factors that go into that. Like, you know, the timing has to be right for when that company in its expansion or whatever it's doing, it fits the timeline for what can be done for them. Like, for example, it takes so long to develop infrastructure, none of which exists on OLF-8. And so, you know, if a company is 18 months out from when they need to have a new facility, well, if we're 24 months out from having infrastructure, it doesn't work for them, right? Just as an example, okay? Does the zoning meet their requirements? Are they the right kind of company for that land, for that location, for the things that are surrounding that area? And then what she said, which I thought, and are we appropriately competitive in their mind when it comes to any kind of benefit that might be given, tax breaks or quality of life value for their employees, all of that kind of stuff? And then kind of that third factor is, well, okay, they can come here, but do we have the people to be hired by them? You know, because you can't just all of a sudden manufacture, let's say, 200 qualified eligible employees if we don't have any other places here in town where they're already doing that kind of stuff and they need jobs. You know, that like that's a problem. It's not insurmountable, but it is a challenge. Now, on the other hand, if you're going to train all of your workforce to do what they need to do, like, for example, Navy Federal, you know, Navy Federal doesn't need the existing employees to be here already because they can train all of them. And just it's how you think about all of the factors that go into making them. And as she says, finding qualified, eligible workforce is one of the big challenges. How long will it take? Lumen May, Commissioner asked.
In creating these jobs for citizens, I mean, you know, everybody wants to know what did you do for them yesterday. Citizens have had this high hope for this project for many years and to the point where many believe that it's not going to happen. I mean, so how soon can we get those jobs? Are the prospects out there now and just waiting on us to make a decision? Or can you talk about that just a little?
Yes, absolutely. I have presented OLF-8 to multiple potential prospects from aviation to manufacturing, et cetera. And the hampering aspect of OLF-8 is the lack of the infrastructure that's there.
This is Danita Andrews from Florida West. That's the economic development arm of the county. Remember when the Chamber of Commerce kind of spun off into three parts several years ago? The Chamber, Visit, and then Florida West. That's kind of the economic side of things. And that's what she's saying is, you know, we've pitched this to a lot of people, but they need something in 14 months, and we're not going to even have a road out there for 2 years. Like, that's kind of the issue in part.
As soon as we can work together to, you know, get infrastructure in place, the businesses will come. The hampering aspect is the timing related to, you know, whether it meets the business model of when they need their production to be taking place. And so if we can get ahead of getting the infrastructure in, then projects are going to naturally come.
Again, with the timing of what they need in their business as opposed to what we would like to have. So again, think about, you know, ready, think about employee ready, and then think about sort of zoning and permitting and county ready. And then you put all of that together, and that's, in my mind, the way you sum up the concept of shovel ready. You sometimes hear that phrase, shovel ready. Well, shovel ready is a result of a bunch of other factors. You know, are you actually ready to start putting shovels in the dirt, or, you know, excavators in the dirt, and making the thing happen?
We were shovel ready today. You believe that you could fill up the 270 acres quickly?
Absolutely. We could make a good dent in that to begin with, I believe. There's a lot of interest out there in, you know, manufacturing arena.
Yeah, and there is, and we're on a good location with I-10. Of course, Santa Rosa having great already shovel-ready locations at their industrial parks has been really killing it. I mean, kicking Escambia's butt in this regard, and that's one of the things that's frustrating a lot of these Escambia advocates for economic development and the Escambia County commissioners who, you know, look at Escambia properties and think, we've had that tech park for two decades. How long is that? You know, long time, and nothing's there. And we got the Midtown Commerce Park, and we've got, you know, the undeveloped corner at Payson Fairfield that was supposed to be rebuilt after they put the jail in and tore down all the businesses there, that we can't have those businesses there, but now we don't have anything there. It just looks like a bombed out lot from an old movie set or something for, I mean, almost as long as I've lived here, right? I mean, it happened right when we moved here. So anyway, that's kind of the problem in Escambia County, is a lot of stuff just doesn't quite seem to get off the ground.
Danita, if you were looking at Santa Rosa, how many sites do you think they have shovel ready today?
At least three industrial areas right off of the interstate that's ready to go.
And that's who we're competing against?
That and Alabama. There's a mega site in Alabama, and they're looking at some additional, you know, investment as well.
Which is worth keeping in mind. It's not just Santa Rosa County. It's other close by competitors that are, you know, and listen, this station, we cover Santa Rosa and Escambia. I'm making it sound like I'm Escambia and there's Santa Rosa. I'm just saying that's the kind of the current relationship, is Santa Rosa has been doing extraordinarily well at landing these gigs. In fact, getting people to move out of Escambia County or Pensacola into Santa Rosa County. Escambia, meanwhile, just keeps, you know, trying real hard. And nothing quite big time seems to. I mean, there are some things. I'm not saying there's been no success. There has been growth, absolutely. But of the sort that Santa Rosa has seen, not really. Now, one of the other things with OLF 8, and it just comes up a lot, and this segment is more like backdrop. If you haven't really been following all this story and just kind of perspective, the meeting itself, where they were until 12:30 at night trying to figure out what to do about who to give the bid to, who to make the contract negotiations with, we'll cover that. And trust me, like Days of Our Milton, this will pay off. Just... John, what do I always say? That's just act one.
Yes, sir.
This is just act one. This is the preface. This is just getting ready, okay? Trust me. Act two, and especially act three, it's amazing. Anyway, so Steve Stroberger, new county commissioner for District 1, replacing Jeff Bergosh, which OLF 8 is in his district. That's the 9-mile property west of Navy Federal, the old outlying landing field for the helicopters. Anyway, the master plan was what was put together by DPZ, as this internationally known planning and agency, and between the county commissioners and the community and everybody else, they created this plan for how that area can be developed to produce jobs, which was the original intent of that property, and also to produce housing and entertainment and town center kind developments that are what the area residents really want. There might eventually be a Beulah City. There isn't yet, obviously. And that plan has been in the heart of so much of the conversation, and people keep saying, well, the spirit of the master plan, because there's some thought that some of the details can't quite work, but we want to keep the idea of satisfying all the parties there. And Steve Stroberger kind of came out and said, I don't like that kind of talk. We either follow the master plan or we don't.
Can someone define what the spirit of the plan means? Because that kind of goofy language worries me, and I think it worries residents out there what that means, because it sounds like a margin for error that's unacceptable.
So you had three competitors, right? Three different bidders. Wilson Catalyst Tri-W is one. You sometimes hear that called the Chad Henderson Group. Beulah Town Center, which is Fred Hemmer. And then Metro is the agency that they have brought in. And then Beulah Ranch, which is Ryan Bell. Now, Beulah Ranch, you know, I think they're trying really hard, but I think based on what we've seen, you know, he's not really a competitor at this point, even though they upped their offer from $30 million to $40 million. and we had him on the show. And it seems like a great guy, loves the area, believes in the master plan and wants to follow it. His family lives in that vicinity, so direct impact on them if he does it wrong. But they're not really in this conversation anymore, and so we're not going to play a lot of clips from him. Rob Ahrens from Metro Development is one of, again, that's with Beulah Town Center, Fred Hemmer. They've been working on this for years and years. Well, Fred's been working on this for years. Metro, they've kind of joined more recently.
Metro Development Group is a headquartered in Tampa, Florida, and we work all over the state of Florida. This is what we do for a living. We do master plan mixed-use communities. As you can see, we have over 50 employees just in our development company. We own 3,500 multifamily units. We have 1,200 acres of commercial. We currently have 28 active projects throughout the state of Florida, with over 60,000 lots included with all of that mixed use.
So Metro's, they're big players in this space. They do a lot, especially in Florida, as you can hear.
Throughout our history, we've won a number of awards for what we've done in the community. These awards don't sit in our offices. They sit in the county offices. We are very, I guess, passionate about partnering with the county or the municipality. This won't work unless we're all happy.
Now, there was one moment in this early pitching at the Committee of the Whole meeting where it kind of raised my eyebrows, but you'll hear it, and I'll explain why it turns out not to be that big of a deal. But Lumen May, who didn't ask many questions, but he was the one who kept asking at least some questions, and nobody else really did much.
So are you satisfied with the DPZ plan? I mean, you think you can work within the confines of that, or you would stray from that?
No, I'm going to say we're going to stray. But I don't know enough about it that I can tell you how. But I already know, I don't think the industrial's up at the north end of the project. I think traffic's going to be one of your bigger concerns in a project like this. And so I think you need to have seamless integration between all of the uses in here.
The eyebrow-raising part was where he says, I don't know enough about the master plan, which has been like at the core of this conversation for all of these years. So, but it came back in the night meeting and, you know, they learned more. And I think the deal is that basically Fred Hemmer has been shepherding this for so long. And now, like, Brian Spencer is with him. And, you know, I don't think that this guy really knew that particular part of the conversation, but just happened to be a gap in knowledge. You know, I think, and they said later on in the evening that they definitely want to, and certainly Fred is a big advocate of the master plan, at least, again, in major concept, if not in particular detail. Then, you know, their idea, again, seemed a little bit of an odd fit, but, you know, we're talking about, like, lots of little shortcut paths and golf cart travel and kind of turning it into one of those planned-ish sort of community feels is what he seemed to have in mind. Whether that's what they actually put on that land, I don't know. But I think Metro has the capability to develop it however they want to do it. And Fred is kind of the local person who's been really running this for several years. On the other hand, the other agency that seems to be, and I mean is, very much in the running for this was the Tri-W Catalyst Wilson Chad Henderson Many Names Group. Just because people keep referring it to different things, you might hear it called different things. And Chad Henderson was explaining that they do believe in the master plan.
We're committed to working within the DPZ plan. I know the word spirit has been thrown around, but we certainly want to work in within the confines of DPZ. We would reach out to them and work with them within the spirit if there was needing to be tweaks. Certainly working alongside with you in those milestones as well. We believe there needs to be one master developer to hold accountable. You know, we in our shop, we call it one throat to choke.
I like that expression, one throat to choke. And he also talked about the importance of developing in a balanced way so that it's not just a, you know, 8-hour community or, you know, for during working hours or an entertainment community from like 5 to midnight, but that it's really an 18-hour community from really 6 a.m. until midnight where you have all the different things, including civics and play and entertainment. And there's going to be a school on that property, I think, is on a good idea. Anyway, then the commissioners got into their conversation. And some of this stuff was, it was interesting, especially having listened to the night meeting since. And, you know, for example, Stephen Berry, Commissioner District 5,
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify what our intent is going to be this evening, so this is on a discussion item for the administrator's portion?
Yes, right. Sir.
Okay. So, hypothetically, at least, you know, aspirationally, we could end up this evening giving some direction to Wes and Allison to try to negotiate an acceptable contract with a party. That's your thought for putting it on so we could act.
I'm only one person, but I would be willing to go forward with that if we could.
That's the goal. I will tell you in advance that did not happen. Did not happen. But yeah, Mike says,
I've talked to everyone multiple times. I will tell you this. I think the county and the board is in a good position. There's a lot of pros here. And I think we're at a point where we need to make a decision with somebody.
I completely agree, and yet they did not. So keep that in mind for Acts 2 and 3. What are the factors at play? Factor number one, do we have the workforce ready for whoever we try to entice to come here for the jobs portion? Do we have the infrastructure? And the answer is we absolutely do not, at least not yet. There's a $14 million in a kind of holding pattern by Triumph. That's the oil spill money to be able to build a road if the road can remain in public hands, because you can't build a road on private property. So that's become kind of this issue, is who's going to retain ownership of the property, who's going to be developing, and will it be eligible for Triumph funding? Because that's a lot of money to throw away if it's not. So workforce, infrastructure, and then the things that the commissioners care about are things like the price tag. You know, 40, 42, it looks like we're in the $42 and $43 million vicinity right now. Price tag matters because that's getting the money back out that hasn't yet been gotten out of the investment. Keep in mind that with inflation, that looks like a big amount of money, but it turns out not to be much of a profit at all when you really consider the cost of building things. Now, but price tag matters because, for example, the people who live in District 2 or in District 5 and maybe District, you know, they don't care an awful lot about Beulah per se. What they care is, what's going to affect them is their money out to build, you know, infrastructure in their areas, like sidewalks, okay? And then it's going to be good-paying jobs of a variety of sorts that can really, benefit Escambia people and not just, you know, bring in their own workforce and that kind of stuff. So that's what we're looking at, okay? And trust me, Acts 2 and 3, when they actually get into the meeting, are going to be more maybe entertaining. But that's the backdrop primer on where we're at getting ready to try to make some decision on this property. 527 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Sarah, it's been ages. How are things?
Hey, Lisa. Things are okay, I guess. Things with Mark haven't felt the same lately.
Oh, Sarah, that is so common. It could just be ED or low testosterone.
Really? I didn't even think about that. I was blaming myself.
Yeah, Jim had ED and low T. I thought I was doing something wrong, but it's just a medical condition. Now he's passionate about his job again, lost a little weight, and even put on some muscle since he went to Wave Men's Health. They specialize in ED and low T treatments, and you should see the way he looks at me now.
Wave Men's Health delivers powerful, personalized treatments to reignite the passion in your relationship, even if other pills and treatments haven't done the job. Don't let ED or low T put a damper on what should be the best time of the year.
I forgot how we used to feel. I got my husband back.
Dial 850-266-7020 or visit WaveMensHealth.com today and rekindle the magic, because you both deserve to feel the joy this season brings. Wave Men's Health, making it happen.
Ever have one of those days where your gut just feels blah?
Ugh, yes.
Occasional bloating or gas could be signs that your gut is out of balance, but Align Probiotic can help. Align 24/7 Digestive Support is a daily use probiotic with a unique strain to help relieve occasional digestive issues. It's the number one doctor recommended brand. So when you feel the signs, it's time to try Align. Align Probiotic. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Investing in times like these can be scary. If you don't have the right person at the helm of your finances, Armada Advisors will put you on the right path for success. Join Wesley Odom with Armada Advisors today at 10 to find a better way you can successfully invest your money and enjoy your retirement. Tune into the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Man, I'm stuffed.
Me too. I ate like a pig.
Pumbaa, you are a pig.
Oh, right.
Okay. Good morning, 6:30. Sorry, 5:30 here on News Radio 92.3. Steve Taylor is sitting in for David Wayne all this week. So I gave Steve no time. It's not fair. But that voice, that chuckle, that experienced voice, you'll hear in just a minute giving you all your headlines and local news right after Fox.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster. There are more than a quarter million homes without power from Missouri to Virginia, and more than 1,300 flights canceled today because of a winter storm moving east throughout the day.
Heavy snow, crippling ice, and blizzard conditions are bringing life-threatening hazards to more than two dozen states, from the plains to the mid-Atlantic. Some areas could see more than a foot of snow, while others are forecast to get half an inch of ice.
Fox's Ashley Strohmeyer. Congress certifies President-elect Trump's Electoral College victory today. His loss 4 years ago led to the Capitol riot.
Capitol Police say they're prepared this year with increased security measures both at the U.S. Capitol complex and elsewhere around Washington. Those measures will remain in place through President-elect Trump's rally in D.C. on January 19th and on his inauguration day, the 20th.
Fox's Evan Brown. Vice President Harris presides over the process starting at 1 p.m. Eastern. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31 right now, 65 degrees in Pensacola. I'm Steve Taylor in for David Wayne on News Radio 92.3. This weekend kicked off the Mardi Gras season in Pensacola. Security of large events has been a topic of discussion after the terror attacks in New Orleans. On Saturday, folks in downtown Pensacola may have noticed an increase in first responders, barricades, and other safety measures as the beginning of the Mardi Gras season rolls on. Pensacola Police spokesperson Mike Wood told Channel 3 News.
The public always sees the obvious things, such as large trucks at big intersections, bollards, barricades. We use things like that, but there's also things that I'm not able to discuss that we use to try and keep the public safe.
One person did call 911, though, during the kickoff event, saying they spotted somebody with a gun.
We were told of an individual that was witnessed taking a weapon out of a bag, put it in his waistband, and walked on Palafox. He left a backpack by itself at a local bar.
That was Mike Wood again, and police in the area found that individual, quickly learning there was no real threat to the public.
So we secured that bag, we looked into that bag and found parts to a toy gun. Other officers found this individual a couple of blocks south of here. They found the toy gun on him, and that's all there was to it. There was nothing to this. There was no arrest, no injuries.
While there was no threat on Saturday night, Wood says this is exactly what citizens need to stay. They need to stay vigilant for these kinds of things in the wake of New Orleans. Well, tomorrow's the deadline to apply for hurricane assistance. If you suffer damage from Hurricanes Helene and Milton, time is running out to ask for some federal help. Gordon Bird has more.
Tomorrow is the deadline to apply for federal assistance for Helene and Milton damage. Troy York with FEMA says once you apply, it's very important to stay in touch.
If their situation should change, if they have to move for one reason or another, they need to let FEMA know that.
If the initial letter from FEMA doesn't offer what you need, there's an appeal process. You may apply over the phone, online, or in person. FEMA's Disaster Recovery Center in Tampa will stay open today and tomorrow till 7 p.m. For other locations, go to FEMA.gov. Gordon Bird, Tampa.
Well, you might notice the weather is changing after a beautiful weekend, temperature-wise. A cold front is moving in and out of northwest Florida right now. A breezy northwest wind is going to blow from some of the coldest air of the season into the area. The temperature drop is starting right about now, and most of the day temperatures will be in the 40s. It'll feel, though, like it's in the 30s all day long with the wind chill factor. And by sunset today, the actual air temperatures will be in the 30s, and overnight lows will fall down into the 20s. And it's a good time that maybe protect your plants if you haven't done so. And speaking of the forecast, let's check the entire forecast from Channel 3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We are going to be seeing a sunny and cold day today. Temperatures falling through the afternoon, 46 degrees for your high. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping into the 30s, 32 degrees. For Tuesday, sunny skies, high near 47. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 27 degrees. Keeping the cold forecast for that Wednesday with sunny skies, high near 48. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thanks, Brooke. Right now, it is getting cooler, 64 in Pensacola, 65 in Gulf Breeze, and 64 in Milton, right now at 5:35. The next news is at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Want to play a game with me and Dad?
Mommy's not feeling good.
You need to vaporize that cold.
Vaporize?
Yeah, with DayQuil VapoCool. It's DayQuil plus a rush of Vicks vapors.
VapoCool! Whoa.
Come on, honey. Let's let Mommy rest.
You guys are amazing. And so is DayQuil VapoCool.
DayQuil VapoCool, the vaporizing daytime coughing, aching, fever, power through your day medicine. And to vaporize sore throat pain, try Vicks VapoCool drops. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru. The men and women here at Anderson Subaru are committed to the Subaru Love Promise, a promise between us and our communities, a promise to make the Gulf Coast a better place to live, to work, and to play. And we're proud of what we've accomplished. From our ongoing support of the Pensacola Breast Cancer Association and Ascension Sacred Heart to volunteering with Feeding the Gulf Coast, we've conducted clothing drives for Loaves and Fishes and charity auctions for Gulf Coast Kids House, and we support Sherwood Elementary School in multiple ways. We're committed to the pets in our communities too, by supporting dog adoption events with Phoenix Rising Rescue, Barktoberfest with Pensacola Humane Society, and Potty Gras with Wolfgang Park and Brews. And the love continues. Through donations, volunteering, and monetary support, Anderson Subaru is making a difference in the lives of our neighbors and our community. The Subaru Love Promise. That's a promise we intend to keep at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
When it comes to precious metals, there's only one place to consider, and that's Emerald Coast Coins. They're the local leader in dealing with coins and jewelry, gold, silver, diamonds, and sterling silver. Emerald Coast Coins buys, sells, and trades. And for the past 15 years, customers from all over the Gulf Coast have trusted Emerald Coast Coins for the best estimates and prices in town. Stop in today. Emerald Coast Coins on Creighton Road.
The cooler weather in Pensacola is a great time of the year for gardening. Whether it's planting roses, planting shrubs and trees in cool weather color, and of course, planning for spring. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got gardening questions, we've got answers on the News Radio Garden Line every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesdays, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9.
Sponsored by Pensacola Hardware, Blue Sky Landscaping, and Barnes Feed Store.
Are you looking for the best news and talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
A singer in a smoky room, the smell of wine and cheap perfume. For a smile they can share the night. It goes on and on and on and on. Strangers waiting.
Good morning, 538 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. You remember a couple of weeks ago, maybe not even that long, maybe a week ago, I played some of the audio clips from a couple of the residents who live on Murphy Lane, which, if you don't know, Murphy Lane is, if you know where Brent and Palafox is, and then you go south on Palafox, there's the school on the east side of the road, of course, the new tax collector's facility on the west side of the road. It's funny, I asked Scott Lunsford yesterday, I was like, hey, when does that place open? He's like, yeah, 2 months ago. It's like November 19th or something. I said, I knew that. I definitely knew that. And I said, well, but why wasn't anybody there on a Saturday? He's like, because, you know, government people don't, they kind of disappear on a Saturday. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess they're not over. I just always figured a place like that doing driver stuff would be, because I had driven through there. Anyway, but it's right in that vicinity. Murphy Lane is the road that runs right south of the storage facilities that are right there. Remember the one that got damaged in Sally and then got rebuilt? Anyway, the Washburn Center that does homeless services there, right across from what used to be the Brentwood Park, I think was the name of that. Anyway, a lot of homeless in that area. There's the elementary school to the south. They had come and complained that on Murphy Lane where they live, the homeless people were really a problem, like harassing them, making them feel unsafe, getting into altercations with them, standing in the middle of the road, preventing them from driving their cars up and down. And okay, so that's bad, and especially bad since Beggs Lane, which is there's like to the east of there is all that forest property. Beggs Lane is down south of that, and those folks have been cleared out of that kind of area. Remember the county, the sheriff's office had cleared out Beggs Lane. So now they were saying Murphy was even worse. Well, I happened to be in the area, and I did what I do, which is I drive. You know, I always want to look at stuff. And I had gone down the one street, which is just one south of there, right by the school, and there was nobody. Like, there was nobody there. And I thought, oh, this is going to turn out to be nothing. And then I turned on Murphy Lane. Oh, my God. It was like a, this is a poignant way to say it. It's probably going to make somebody upset. It was gallery night for homeless. I mean, the street was packed. There, it wasn't like 1,000 people, but, I mean, 100? 150? 50? It's not easy to count crowds, but it was a lot. And all of their possessions and all of their grocery carts and all of their just like the whole road was the sidewalk. And Washburn is giving out services, which is good. That's what they do. Okay. You know, Mike Kimbrell's a friend. He runs that center. And I drove down through them and I really didn't know what to expect. Like, you know, I'm filming. They can probably see that inside the car. Am I going to get harassed? Are they going to be a problem? And they weren't. Nobody bothered me. I drove through. I drove back to the back and took a look, and there was nobody there, and then I drove back through. And I thought to myself, you know, on the one hand, these folks aren't harassing. They're not intimidating. They're not interfering with the road. They weren't actually in the street. You know, they're just all on the side. And yet, would I want to live there? You know, would I want to drive through that all the time? And I've had people tell me that it's much worse at other times of the day, especially, you know, at night. And I don't know. I haven't seen. But I took a look, and here's the kind of conflicting challenge. On the one hand, they're clearly getting services from Washburn. They clearly have a need, or at least there is a demand for what Washburn is doing, and they're congregating. And where else are they going to congregate? This is part of the problem we have now with the no camping ordinance in Florida, and also, of course, in Escambia and Pensacola City. You know, where do they go? That's kind of the where are they going to be. Well, here's a place where they go at least for a time, and then what after that? I don't know. On the other hand, you know, I wouldn't want to live on that street. And if I had kids, I didn't feel particularly safe just me alone, and I certainly wouldn't feel safe if I were, say, a mom with kids, you know? And every day, it'd be pretty frustrating, you know, to drive through that or have to walk through that, and especially if there are these other things that we've been told about. So how do you solve it? Well, I wish I had an answer. You know, my magic fix the homeless problem wand hasn't worked for a while, but there needs to be a place where these folks can get their services. I think ideally you'd have a facility like the Washburn Center wouldn't be in and amongst all of the residential. It's not a lot of residential back on Murphy, but there's some. You know, kind of like the, oh my God, my brain. what's the big homeless shelter that I give money to? The Waterfront. You know, Waterfront's in an area where it's all industrial and it's not the same. It's not as much of an issue if there are, and there are people on the sidewalks and the parking lots there. But it's more open. There's more room to drive and see. It's not quite the same visually. So how do you solve this? Is there even a solve? Is there a problem? I don't know. But it's not great what's going on right now. You know, I wish I had better answers, but a lot of times I feel like on this subject, here's the problem. Now what? You know? And since the county has so far shown zero appetite for creating a camping area for the unhoused, the homeless, the, you know, whatever you want, vagrants, you know, whatever you want to call them. That solution isn't being tried. We are trying things like the Project Reconnect to send them back home, a couple hundred of them, I think 100 so far. But in, you know, the grand scheme of the number of homeless we have, that's not much. I mean, there's a couple, 1,500, I think, is the rough estimate. We're doing our point in time count right now. So, you know, like, you know, I wish I had a better news. I don't have a big, like, no big finish here. That's what's going on. The video, if you want to see it, is up on our Facebook page. And if you want to watch that and kind of get a perspective for yourself of what would you think if it was on your street, I don't think most people would say, oh, yeah, fine, no big deal. And I'm pretty, you know, go ahead in my backyard for a lot of things. You know, you want to build tiny houses in my neighborhood? Cool. You know, you want to have like the Satoshi Forest, which is the homeless campground that Mike Kimbrell also oversees over off of Massachusetts. Like, that wouldn't bother me near my neighborhood at all. Like, you know, I've toured there. That wouldn't bother me at all. This is different. This is a little bit different. 437-1620, 437-1620. 16:20. We're trying to do as many candidate interviews for Congressional District 1 as I can. I don't have any intention to endorse in this race. God help me, I don't have any idea. I don't even know who I'm voting for yet. I don't even understand who half the candidates are. That's part of why I'm doing it. I want to meet them. You know, I've interviewed a few of them. We're going to have Michael Dillon Thompson on today at 6:35. I'm working on interviews for the rest of the week. I think we got Aaron Dimmock on it on Wednesday. I had sent a text to Jimmy Petronas like 2 weeks ago and didn't hear back from him, so I'll give him a call later. We'll try, you know, we'll get Jimmy on, assuming he wants to come on. And there's a couple of other people that we haven't talked to at all. And we'll try to get as many of them in as we can so that you know who you're voting for, especially now that people are early voting, or not early, but mail-in voting, you know, already. You've got your ballots. 437-1620, 437-1620. Speaking of housing things, if you're thinking about buying or selling a home, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty are fantastic at this. They sold 175 homes in 2023. I need to get with her and find out how many they sold in 2024, but I know it was on track to be about that same number. And the reason I mention that is obviously success tells you something about their abilities, but it also just shows you what they know. You know, you do something 10 times a year, you know it to a certain degree. You do it 3.5 times a week, you know, you do it 175, 150, 200 times a year. You have a different level of knowledge about how to get to the end result all the way through to closing, solve the problems, see them before they're coming and avert them, and make sure that you're in the best position to get the best price buying or to get the best price selling, whichever it might be. And they know. They really, really know, including all the other stuff, like understanding how the changes in the insurance market in Florida will affect your ability to buy and sell a home. And they have. Trust me, they absolutely have, because things you would have never thought about previous to like the last 3 or 4, maybe 5 years, things like, do I need to replace my 12-year-old roof to sell a house? Maybe. Maybe. Do I need to replace my, you know, 12-year-old water heater? Maybe. I mean, like, what? Yeah, no, seriously, that's where we're at right now. So Christine and her team, they can help you with all of that stuff. 723-9158.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 92% of PSC students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs, ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Register today for spring semester. Classes start January 10th. Go to pensacolastate.edu. That's pensacolastate.edu to learn more.
Hurricane season is here, and now is the time to make a plan and know your zone. In the case of an evacuation, have a plan to go to a hurricane shelter, hotel, or stay with a family or friends. If you're ordered to evacuate, you need to leave. You can rebuild your home, but you cannot rebuild your life. This hurricane season, know your zone. Know your home. Learn more at floridadisaster.org. This message is sponsored by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
News Radio 92.3 is proud to be a partner in the success of a lot of local businesses. We want your business to be part of this success story in 2025 with our unique platform to showcase your powerful message. Every day, News Radio's Pensacola Expert Panel provides an opportunity unlike any other. Hi, I'm Meg, host of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Let us help you share your message. Contact us to get you and your business part of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Call 850-262-6000.
When you listen to News Radio 92.3 on Sundays, you get Christian Outlook at 7, Ask the Preacher at 8, Town Hall Review, Fox News Sundays, The Weekend, Tech It Out, and Gun Talk at 8.
Is there any insanity in your family?
Oh, by the way, it's, you know, Vote Certification Day. It's January 6th, don't you know? January 6th, what's going to happen? Nothing. They've got giant metal barriers up all around the Capitol. And we have a speaker. Remember on Friday there was some uncertainty about whether Mike Johnson would be able to retain his speakership? And he did, no big deal. But that's mostly, if you ask me, because all of the Republicans realized that if you didn't get a speaker picked on Friday, then all of a sudden you can't do the vote certification today, and it was important to do that. And also, it's very temporary. Like, it might be for a month, it might be for 2 months. They're itching to replace him or to try and see, and it only takes a couple of people given the vote closeness, you know, the number of seats being so close in Congress. So, yeah, he got the speakership pretty easy on Friday, especially with Donald Trump calling him from the tee box with his five iron in hand, seriously, talking to different people about why they need to support Mike Johnson, at least for now. This may be a different story in a month. Who knows? 550 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. And we got, let's see, David Wayne is out. So we got Steve Taylor sitting in from this week. Steve?
Well, good morning. A New Orleans personal injury law firm is going to file a lawsuit against the city and the police department over the New Year's Day Bourbon Street terrorist attack. That lawsuit claims the city and police failed to put basic safety precautions in place for the citizens and visitors. Congress, as you just mentioned, is going to meet today to certify the results of the 2024 election. Members of the House and Senate will count those electoral votes from all 50 states in the District of Columbia, with Vice President Kamala Harris reading aloud each state's results. And the Buccaneers have won the NFC South for the fourth straight season. Yay! The team secured the division title after taking down the Saints 27-19. Baker Mayfield threw for 221 yards, two touchdowns, and a pick. He added 68 rushing yards in nine carries. The Bucs enter the NFC playoffs as a third seed at 10-7 and will host the number six Commanders in the wild card round on Sunday. And that's what's happening.
I am going to challenge you to see if you can find some slightly higher quality ambient audio of crowd reaction to that result. Because the one you played was, I'm just going to say it was a little bit weak. No, I love it. It's great. It was funny. All right. Thanks so much, Steve, for the update. Getting back to the Bourbon Street attack, a couple of things have come out. One is, of course, he used the Google glasses to go survey the area previously at least two times, like in November and earlier in December. Another thing, and there's some discrepancy in the reporting here, so I'm not 100% sure what's correct. Remember, President Biden had said the FBI had said that there was a remote detonator that he had used for the two IEDs in the coolers. But then also I read a report that said he actually didn't have detonator technology available to him and instead used like a electrical ignition, electrical lighting, like an, some kind of a starter, and that just failed on him. He didn't know what he was doing. And so they were not remote operated. So I don't know the truth of that. I'm kind of telling you everything that I know. Also, he had set the Airbnb or whatever on fire, and then that fizzled out. He had set that with some gasoline, and it basically ran out of oxygen in a closed room. So he's a poor arsonist, I guess you might say, among other things. And one of the things with the police getting sued, what's interesting about that to me is, there's so much stuff around these bollards. The bollards that they are replacing the old bollards with the new bollards, and apparently the new bollards, the police chief or the mayor isn't even sure whether those bollards would stop a truck. You have one job. Like bollards, these, you know, street poles basically have literally one job, and it is to stop the major device. Also, apparently, there are these portable or semi-portable, they're kind of big metal, ugly yellow things that look like almost a giant boot that you put in the middle of a place, and then that impedes, you know, it's like a portable bollard, if you want to think about it that way, or a portable barrier. Apparently, the city of New Orleans has had these since several years, like 7 or 8 years, and have deployed them since to Bourbon Street to keep it safe, and just didn't on that night. I read that one place, okay, so I think that's true, but let's say that's 75% likely. I haven't seen that confirmed elsewhere, so that's kind of a problem. Also, on the Las Vegas attack, the more we learn about that, the less that looks like it has anything to do with the other one. I know that, you know, a lot of folks, we talked about this the other day, superficial similarities between the two, you know, they're both in the Army, that kind of stuff. Yeah, there's not a lot of actual similarity there. And it looks like the Cybertruck, based on the note that was left, that the Green Beret who killed himself and detonated the Cybertruck thing wasn't maybe even trying to do a lot of damage. And I'll tell you why I think that in a second. But the note he wrote said, and the only reason I share this is because I wouldn't normally, because I don't want to give, you know, amplitude to somebody's manifesto or whatever, but it helps dissuade you maybe of the notion that there was a coordination between the two, okay? He says Americans only pay attention to spectacles and violence. What better way to get my point across than a stunt with fireworks and explosives? Why did I personally do it now? I need to cleanse my mind of the brothers I've lost and relieve myself of the burden of the lives I took. In other words, it's like a guilt and PTSD and raise awareness and get attention thing, not a harm people and kill people thing. And the reason I say that sort of fits with the situation is that there apparently was this big Green Beret discussion thread. I didn't read it or anything, but among the Special Forces folks talking about, well, this guy surely knows how to build an IED. He surely knows how to build a truck bomb. He definitely knows how to do real damage if he wanted to, and he didn't. He basically made us a show, but it, you know, there was no shrapnel, for example, which is a very basic element of an explosive if you're going to really try to hurt people. And he didn't do any of the things you'd normally do. And so between the note that he seems to have left, personal circumstances, and then just the incompetence of that as a dangerous device, seems unlikely that they're connected. Just seems more like either a total coincidence on the timing or, you know, maybe, I don't know. I think based on how you would have had to prepare for it, that he couldn't have reacted to the New Year's Day bombing. But that, anyway, that's just if you've been kind of half following all of that, that's, or a little bit following, that's kind of the update on that story. 5:56 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. One of the more interesting things that's going to be happening here in Florida is you have this ongoing question about schools and religion, because now we have the chaplaincy program available where schools can have chaplains, you know, come in. If the parents opt in, which is an important part of that, then, you know, you have access. Well, similar, not the same. Broward County School, apparently they had put up some kind of a sign at, let's see, this was the school board had allowed banners at West Glades Middle School and Coral Springs High School that were sort of pro Calvary Chapel, pro Potter's House, between December 2023 and September of 2024. Religious organizations had put up banners. So when a religious organization puts up banners at a school, who comes and wants equal attention? That's right, the Satanic Church. So the Satan's Church, the Church of Satanology and Perpetual Soiree, activist Timothy Stevens, a let's put it in air quotes, minister of the Church of Satanology and Perpetual Soiree, wanted banners at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, kid you not, and West Glades Middle School that said, Satan loves the First Amendment. They said no. They got sued, motion to dismiss, not allowed, so the federal judge said that that lawsuit is moving forward, trial scheduled for March 10th. We'll see how it turns out. Interesting story in Politico. You don't get a lot of positive news about Florida or Governor DeSantis out of Politico, and I would say this is marginally positive. Headline, Classical Education Thrives in DeSantis's Florida. Andrew Atterbury, writes a fairly lengthy article about the growing classical education movement in the United States being pioneered heavily here in Florida, that we are very ahead of the curve and fostering principles of moral character, classroom Western education, classic text, trying to get away from all the nonsense that seems to have invaded schools in the last several years. The school, the unions, the teachers' unions pushed heavily against this. They lost. DeSantis and the legislature won. And like I said, it was a moderately favorable report about what Florida is doing on school choice and, you know, private schools wanting to be oriented towards classical education. The one giveaway that the person in the article is either not that well-informed or not that neutral is they said a conservative think tank, American Center for Transforming Education, the Discovery Institute, says Florida is such a front-runner on these education reforms like they've been on so many other ones. A conservative think tank advocates for teaching in air quotes intelligent design, but not capitalized, as opposed to, you know, intelligent design theory. IDT is you know, a fairly popular thing among non-evolutionists, and the fact that he would air quote it and not capitalize it should tell you a little bit about the author's perspective.